Today on Talk About That, John sports a faux hawk for 3 years too long and writes a book about history's most patriotic duvet. Meanwhile, I want to smell like flowers and worry my own hairline is showing signs of retreat. Also, a conversation about the power of inside jokes in relationships and the importance of feeling seen and heard. Plus, an exciting special announcement about the future of the podcast. Today's episode is not sponsored by Christmas Cookie Tins. The cookies are gone. This is where your mother keeps her sewing stuff now.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
It's go time.
Talk about what? Talk about that. I'm John here with Johnny. Another week, another episode, Johnny. And I feel like there's the haters out there that we continue to defy. And I wish we had some haters, actually, because
we need
something to rise up against. You get stronger by having more resistance.
Yeah, we need opposition so that we can really figure out who we are as a person.
Maybe that's why our careers
as
are where they
people.
Are. We haven't had enough opposition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think
it's been pretty smooth sailing for me. I don't know about you.
Maybe we like do an anti-Patreon.
Okay.
Like what we're doing is they sign up to like troll us and to keep pushing us down so that we then have to keep pushing ourselves up.
Like a Hatreon. Give this much money and we'll stop making the show.
Yes.
And it's like a thermometer. I always thought it was funny when you do fundraisers and it's a thermometer. It's like, that doesn't even make any sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, as you give, the thermometer goes up. But it's like, it's not temperature. It's thousands of dollars.
Well, what would be the correct visual?
I don't know. Like a dial that goes from left to right. The give-o-meter.
But that would... Those dials are like for audio. Like you got to find something that's money related.
It could be a Richter scale. It could be a whatever.
So you're okay using earthquake or sound, just not using temperature?
Yeah. It's so much money, we had an earthquake. Thanks for giving. And now we need to raise money for the earthquake. Devastation.
Relief. And what a relief it is to be back on the air with you, Johnny.
That was a great segue.
Did you like that?
No.
Okay.
It's a terrible, obvious segue. Yeah. You need to do better. I don't know. I think I tell my wife, you know, we're very insecure people.
You and your wife?
No. My wife... I'm trying to think. Is my wife insecure? No, she's not. Not compared to me.
No.
No.
Well, who is compared to you? So
nothing compares to me. So I was looking at photos from this last show because there was a professional photographer that came out. I was opening for my friend Jen Fulweiler. And so she had a photographer friend come out that shoots live shows. And he's really good. So she goes, you got to see these photos. And he sent them to me. And I'm doing these expressions during the show. I don't know if I have new faces I'm doing. But I'm kind of like doing this. You know, and I'm kind of, whoa, like I'm like a surprised look. And it makes kind of like my hair go back a little bit. And I go, I think I'm getting a five head. Curry goes, what? I go, you know, like you're not going bald, but you don't have a forehead anymore. You've got a five head. Like it's a little bit creeping back there for you. And she was like, you don't have a five head.
Is that a common expression or did you make that up?
No. It's a common expression.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I'm sure you and all the kids are sitting around.
All the kids are saying five head.
Yeah.
So... you know what I'm saying? It's just a little bit bigger than a forehead. It's a five head. So I just don't, I don't know if it's happening or if it's in, if it's all in my head, but
I think it's all on your head.
Yeah.
Johnny, as a guy who has lost his hair.
Yeah. I think you, I'm getting a five. I think there's no doubt about it.
You don't seem to have that appearance for me.
Like if I do this, if I, hey, then, but if I go, whoa, and then the hairline goes, it, I feel like there's a little bit.
This feels like.
I have all my hair, but it's just, it's retreating. I think it's retreating. The front line is being like, hey, let's hang out back here for a minute.
This feels like a New York Times bestseller calling me to complain about the book Life.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it, Johnny. You have hair.
No, but you've got a great head, so you're you're good with.
You think I'm just good with this? Johnny, this is what I had to settle on to survive. This is me pushing up, like we said. Like I'm.
Yeah.
I had to do something. I couldn't just stay where I was. I will say this, looking at old pictures, about there was about a 3-year gap.
Yeah. Where you were still hanging
about
on.
A 3-mile gap.
Hanging on to those scraps.
And I waited about 3 years too long.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I look at them, I'm going, wow. Especially like at weddings and stuff where I needed to wear a suit and kind of
But you
look.
Never combed over or anything.
I faux-hawked.
Oh, right. You did do the faux-hawk. I remember
the faux-hawk was okay in the beginning. Faux-hawks were a thing. And then after a while, you're faux-hawking, though, and if
it's
any,
just there's not a lot in the faux-hawk.
If any light shines up there,
yeah,
like it's like
it's a no-hawk.
Yeah. Again, like I said, I didn't know it was under there. And guys, isn't that just like our lives? Some of us are holding on to faux-hawks,
and you could be you could have a nice, like, smooth, beautiful head underneath that.
Yeah, like a simpler life.
I say, yeah, way simpler, yeah. Right? Just soap and water, and you're done.
Yeah. That is true. I don't have separate products anymore.
Wow. I mean, I really only have one.
Yeah.
I've got one of those like all-in-one body wash, mouthwash, toothpaste. They think men are stupid in the marketplace, by the way, to do all that stuff.
You guys can't handle having multiple bottles in the shower.
And the smells are all like, you know, twisted metal or whatever. Like just, I want to smell like lilacs. It's okay for me to smell like lilacs.
Yeah, I remember that one commercial when they first came out. It was like, and it looks like it's in an oil can. Like, yeah. I remember, you know, it was like a bunch of guys marching, someone with a tuba going, men. It was very,
yeah. Well, we are dumb, but we're not that dumb.
Right.
I want to smell good. You don't have to call it something fierce.
Right.
You know.
Alpine.
Yeah, fierce alpine. That's like an angry lumberjack. Get out of here. I don't want to be that.
You don't want to smell like, The kind of like earthy adjectives that they come up with for it, the people who really are out there in those environments smell awful.
Right.
Like if you came upon a guy who had been working as a lumberjack
all day.
He'd be
like, please give me some lilacs.
Right. Please.
I'm awful.
Is it lilacs?
Lilacs?
I think lilac.
Lilac?
Isn't that the, I don't know if you.
Is it plural? The plural of lilac would be lilacs.
I don't know.
Well, what you mean? You think lilac plural is just lilac, like deer?
I think if you said I want to smell like lilac, not like lilacs. That's like saying
multiple lilacs.
I want to smell like cedar, not like cedars. We tackle the tough questions here, guys.
We do. So, I told you about the one body wash that I did have. That I looked at the bottle one day and I thought, this is out of control. It had it said with menthol plus caffeine.
Because caffeine can it can tighten skin that's sagging and stuff.
A little crepey. I was getting a little crepey.
Can help you
get a little turkey gobbler under here, cinch up for you. But I just thought like that's what I need when I'm in the shower is like menthol and caffeine. Because when I'm in there, I'm like I could use a Newport and a cup of Joe. Of course, you do take a cup of Joe to the shower.
I did this
because you're a maniac.
I don't drink a lot of it.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure, and again, of course, this is all covered in The Ultimate Guide for the Avid Endorsement on Amazon.
Now available.
Yeah. But the key to taking an open cup, which is what I took this morning, I didn't have time to go get like, you know, one of the.
An open cup, like it could get splashed in.
Well, I'm explaining how you do that.
You got your sudsy water.
So we have one of those like shower shelves, you know, that you hang that has
which
all your stuff
are for
on.
Bath products. But you've adapted them for...
As long as the top shelf of that's a wire shelf, as long as it's you know, got enough room, you just make sure your cup is higher than the shower head. And, I mean, Johnny,
It's
just science.
That's a great strategy.
Waterfall is at 9.2 meters per second squared. Okay. Yeah. 9.8. I don't remember.
I don't even know that
all
one.
All objects fall at 9.8 meters per second squared.
Isn't it 32 feet per second?
9.8 meters per second squared is, I believe.
I always thought terminal velocity is 32 feet per second.
Well, I'm doing a squared and you're doing a non-squared. Maybe
velocity same thing.
Versus, yeah, it's two different measurements. There's no way to know. There really isn't any way to know. I found myself helping Sadie with homework last night and trying to Google something that could not be Googled.
Oh, really? You broke Google.
Like, I needed to know what an input-output chart looked like for a nonlinear function.
Oh.
And this is eighth grade math. I'm going, I don't think I did this stuff till high school.
Like, I don't.
Trigonometry.
John, I don't know what you just said. And I've got my JED.
Well, I'll say it again. Guys, this is what my eighth grader, we needed to know, because I don't remember even doing this ever. And I'm a math teacher. But like, I don't remember. I mean, I've done functions.
Do you think kids are being asked to do more in school today? Or are you one of those that thinks that the kids are getting by? Kids are being asked to do more.
As someone involved in homework a lot and a former teacher, I do feel that they're being asked to do more than we were.
But we don't hold kids back anymore either if they don't make it.
Sometimes.
Do we?
Usually it's voluntary, though. The parents, there's a lot more, I think, there's a lot more collaboration between the staff and the principals and the faculty and all that with parents. So like, hey,
they get together and say, we're holding your kid back.
Or
the janitor wants him held back, frankly. he doesn't like what he's seeing.
See, there's the myth, Johnny.
Okay.
If you feel like a kid's on your nerves, then you don't want to hold him back.
You don't want to hold him back.
You want to get
now you're going to have one more year of that kid.
My dad was a principal, you know, for years, and he would always joke at me about that. Like, hey, I got a few kids that we're getting them to graduation this year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he loves them. He knows they need to start their lives. And also, you know, love you, Dad.
Good luck out there.
Yeah. I think about my dad's teacher stories all the time. They're pretty crazy.
Yeah, he had some like lean on me kind of stories.
Oh, yeah.
If you know that movie, Morgan Freeman, that's what movie kind of made Morgan Freeman famous. He played, it's the true story of Joe Clark, who was a principal in Detroit.
Yeah.
One of the worst schools. He takes it, supposedly turns it around. Although the real story behind that guy is crazy. Like, that movie's very embellished from what I've heard. That guy's not a hero in real life. But anyway, the movie, he was a hero. But yeah, so your dad had some he didn't chain doors, did he? Because didn't he chain the doors to keep the drug dealers out?
In the movie, he did.
Yeah.
And then the fire marshal shows up because he has political enemies, on the school board.
But I'm saying, did your dad ever do anything like that?
No, but my dad, so after Columbine, my dad...
You're just like, my dad made a deal with the drug dealers. He said, only between the hours of...
Dad had a lot of different things going. One was after Columbine, he was the first principal that we know of in America to put cameras in schools.
Huh.
Like as a standard thing. And then dad worked...
That seems like a no-brainer. I mean, other than like privacy, like you wouldn't,
And I know this is a really rightfully so touchy subject right now with what just happened in Texas and everything, but you know, my dad used to work with the Justice Department some. He would go and present, and he would work with Nashville, like SWAT and other people on school evacuation procedures.
Oh, like action plans, yeah.
So he would write procedures for all of Metro schools.
Huh.
And so, I mean, it's just crazy. But he would, I know when he was a teacher especially, over, you know, Maplewood High School in Nashville. It's a pretty rough school at the time. I mean, it's where we grew up in that area. But, you know, dad would take weapons off of kids all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he also had a policy where if a kid felt unsafe, something was going down, that kid could come to my dad and he promised them he would not reveal them as a source.
Huh.
And so one time he went to court over a situation and the judge said, you have to tell me who the source was. And dad said, I can't. I mean, I'll lose the credibility of being the safe place for all the kids in the school. And the judge just dug in and said, listen, I'm going to hold you in contempt of court if you don't reveal your source.
Uh-huh.
And dad said, I can't do it. And I remember I was probably 9 or 10 when this happened. I remember
you thought dad might be going to jail.
Well, he said, well, I'm going to reschedule this hearing for tomorrow. And if you show up unwilling to reveal your source, just go ahead and bring your toothbrush because you're going to spend the night in jail. Yeah, he told him.
Yeah.
So dad came home. Of course, looking back, mom and I were talking about this the other day. You know, of course, dad's passed on now. But my dad probably loved this.
Like, oh,
He was such a...
Well, you get to actually, like, stand yes. for a principle. It's a cool moment.
Yeah, stand for
which also
right.
you don't want to go to jail.
No, but I don't think the guy was going to lock him up for life or something.
One of those kids you graduate that's going to be in there in the cell next to you. Hey, thanks a lot.
Well, we prayed because, you know, the whole family was like, oh, yeah. we don't dad go to jail. Mm-hmm. And he went in the next day to court, and that judge had gotten sick or something, and it was a different judge who just dismissed it, who didn't make dad do it. So it was like a real moment for us, like, oh, wow.
So you're saying you think God made the guy sick?
I think God answered our prayers. I don't know how he did so. I don't know if he was
stomach
sick.
Stomach bug from on high.
Come on now. But, yeah, I've got some great stories of dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he was that. I remember in that movie, the scene in the movie with Joe Clark, I always remember, is when the drug dealers are in the school and one of them pulls a switchblade on another kid.
Right.
Joe Clark runs in the middle of it. Of course, he always carried a bullhorn because he was always, you know, talking in the halls. And that guy comes after Joe Clark because the very beginning of the movie is real graphic. Like, remember that guy? They're beating up that teacher at the beginning. And they just take his head and just smash it on the on the hard floor for like 20 times. And like the dude's just busted open. It's nasty, you know. And it's dangerous, you know. Clark then, he comes at him with the knife and he uses the bullhorn.
Yeah, to block the switchblade.
To block the switchblade and like just punch the dude. Of course, the dude's an adult.
Yeah.
And he's like a 19, 20-year-old drug dealer. But I just always remember how like that was such a, I don't know, a striking moment for
me.
Like,
you can't.
Yeah. Justice, you know. In real life, there's probably a lot of legalities involved, but that's why he's locking the doors, so.
Man. Yeah, the real story behind that guy is worth Googling, because I think I saw an article about it. It was like, basically, it was a listicle about, which is my favorite kind of articles, because I'm kind of neurodivergent, so I'm just like, I like a paragraph about this, then a paragraph about this, then a paragraph about this. I like things laid out that way. And so, it was about, like, 10 movies based on true stories that are total BS, basically.
Did Blindside make the cut?
Blindside was one. Yeah. Remember the Titans? There was a lot of sports ones.
Yeah.
Remember the Titans was one that was like so glaring because evidently like the movie, the school had been integrated forever, first of all. And then the movie, the end game where they barely win or whatever. I think they beat that team like 52-9 or something, you know? So it was kind of like they just added a little Hollywood magic to all the whole story.
Wow.
But I mean, that's okay, I guess. I mean, it's one of those things like when you're watching a movie that's based on a true story, it does give it an little extra oomph because you're like, this really happened? But we know now, I think our culture now is a little bit more wary. Like we've been privy to 20 years of reality shows that we know have writers.
Yeah.
So when you see like at the end of a reality show, we started seeing like written by and you're like, hold on a minute.
Wait a second.
Yeah. This isn't just cameras set up in a room.
Yeah.
And so now we're conditioned to be like, well, yeah, of course we know this is probably like they added some like Aaron Brockovich was a good person, but there's probably a lot about Aaron Brockovich that they're not putting in here. You know,
I struggle with it. Obviously, you know, I told that story before that I did a book based on a true story once that was fictionalized in places. And I remember one scathing comment. It was like, how did a bunch of Christians manage to get together and take this incredible story of this guy? And I was like, I didn't respond to it, but it was like, you know,
found a way to ruin it.
It's like, you know, that guy was the author. Like,
like he's a collaborator.
Right. Like he wanted, he knows. It's not like we took his story and twisted it away from him. You know, like I have a historical thing I've mentioned a few times I'm working on. And I think I've gone away. My original ideas years ago were that maybe you write like something this dramatic, you know, because it I think I write in this non-dramatic form, like it's stranger than fiction in some ways or more remarkable. Specifically, I'll tell one story. Okay. I can't tell that because it's going to burn the book then.
John, such a tease.
Should I tell it?
You always do this. I
mean, no one out there is going to write this, right? No.
No.
So the guy that named the American flag.
Right.
Old Glory. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll tell later why I would be interested in that, because that may not seem like the kind of story I'd want to write, but there's a reason. And it's an incredible historical, you know, journey, and it occurred, you know, before, during, and after the Civil War in Nashville. And so he had the original Old Glory. He was a captain from Salem, Massachusetts, who had sailed around the world twice, had spent 20 years at sea, retired after the death of his first wife in Nashville, married again, remarried, by the way, the niece of his brother-in-law, I think, and she was 15, and he was like 30, which is common in 18, you know, 40s.
It's a different time.
Yeah. And so he's living here, and Old Glory is like his thing, and he had a house down on Fifth Avenue, which was then called Summer Street, southern end of Summer Street. And on Washington's birthday, Jefferson's birthday, I think, and on St. Patrick's Day, which was this guy's birthday, mm-hmm. they would take a rope and hang the flag. It was hang the flag across the street, and like parades and processionals, people would come by. It was like a big celebration, you know, a big patriotic celebration in front of his house.
Yeah.
And he would tie it to a locust tree. His son would have his son tie it to a locust tree across the street. So there's pictures, you know, of that house and where the tree was. And so as the war gets closer, you know, we were talking about breakfast this morning, like there's just violence erupting between neighbors.
Yeah.
And, sometimes it's just to settle old scores. Like it's just, it uncorked this thing that was already inside of them. Well, they come, the Democratic governor of Tennessee named Ishmael Harris, who was a secessionist who wanted to secede, and Tennessee was the last state to leave the mm-hmm. Union. And so it was a long drawn out sort of process. He sent this band, he called it a committee of Confederate sympathizers, to this guy's house on Fifth Avenue, Summer Street, then demanding to find Old Glory, the flag, because everyone knew it was there. So it went from like being the celebrated, you know, sort of.
Right, now it's like contraband.
Now it's contraband because they're about to be behind enemy lines. And the old guy just faced him down. Like he was this old sea captain and he was just stubborn and defiant. And
you want to do a voice?
Of his voice?
Yeah, the sea captain.
Well, I think the historical narrative.
Just trying to add some.
Literally
color
says
to
he's
the...
actually sent two groups, if not more, to his house.
Yeah.
And he was one of them, he said, one of the guys was a neighbor, actual neighbor of his named Dick McCann.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick McCann was leading this group of guerrillas up to the dude's house. And he just walked out on the porch and they came into the gate on the front yard. And he just said, Dick, I've known you my whole life, or known you your whole life. If you want my flag, you'll take it over my dead body.
Mm.
And so they just like, hey, let's just leave the old man alone. And they left. But they never found the flag. Well, then when the Union came, it wasn't the Battle of Nashville. That wasn't until 1864. But in early 1862, when the Union, you know, sort of recaptured, really really the battle was Fort Donelson.
Yeah.
And they thought that was going to protect Nashville. Well, when that fell to Ulysses S. Grant, they knew they were coming to Nashville. And Nashville was a key, like, railroad center, especially a supply line into the South. And so it was captured early in the war, and it remained under Union control the entire war after 1862. And when they know that Grant's armies, it's not Grant's, actually General Nelson's armies, are coming, mm-hmm. everyone freaks out. Like, the governor gets on a horse and starts riding through the streets, like, causing panic, telling everybody to run, because they had, like, 3 or 4 days probably, but... I mean, the Confederates just flee, you know, because they're going to be destroyed and they want to, you know, be able to regroup. And so when the Union soldiers finally arrive, they come to this guy's house, or he comes actually and finds them, and he pulls out a quilt and he takes out a pair of scissors and they start cutting open the quilt. And he had had two Unionists, the daughters of a Unionist neighbor, two daughters in secret, sew Old Glory into a quilt.
Hmm.
And literally he says, and he became pretty famous after this, and there was articles all over the country, and there's a couple books written about him back in the late, you know, 19th century. And he literally had slept. This is what I'm saying. This is stranger than fiction. The guy slept under Old Glory every night for 8 months during the Confederate occupation. They couldn't find his flag, and he literally was sleeping under it, which I just think you can't write that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you
It was like in the quilt, like between the two linings. So it's really a duvet. It's a duvet
it was like
of freedom.
Old duvet is what they called it.
That's what I call it.
And he marched up to the state capitol about a mile from his house,
right,
and climbed all the way to the top and raised Old Glory over Nashville with his own hands. And it flew all night, and he stood guard over it, took it down the next morning because the wind was causing damage.
Mm-hmm.
And like it became, again, a national, not just... It's a moniker now for the American
right.
flag in general, but there was an original Old Glory. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. Someday I'll tell you why I would research that
and
story.
And then he got home, and his wife was like, what have you done to this quilt? Like, I appreciate everything you've been through, but
Yes.
You're going to help me stitch this back?
Do you think these just grow on trees?
I don't know where quilts grow.
Yeah.
I wish I did.
But and by the way, three of his sons, two fought for the Confederacy, and one was too young to fight for the Confederacy, but he was a secessionist. So talk about awkward Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, this is happening. This is here. You know, like it's a crazy time. You talk about how divided we are today. I'd actually take comfort in seeing how divided we've been before.
That we could come back together.
Well, that we can survive.
Yeah.
And that I think there can be better days. I think there's some people that never stop being divided. It's just that they stop. Perhaps a mindset becomes more acceptable. Because the truth is, during Reconstruction and post, it wasn't like America became less racist.
Right.
Like actually racism. Well,
it's like the old Martin Luther King thing of like a law can't make someone love me, but it can keep him from lynching me.
Yeah. And he said, I think that's pretty important.
Yeah.
That was the end of that quote.
You know, so it's like sometimes, you're not going to change people's hearts, but you can move the needle and make them slowly. You can slowly bring about change.
Yeah. And I think it's important. Yeah. I do think, again, it what's inside of us matters, you know, and it's sort of the study I'm doing is sort of like through that period, not all the way from the beginning necessarily, but the sort of evolving definitions of patriotism, you know, because you had soldiers like Robert E. Lee who had, I mean, what was it? A Union hero during the Mexican-American War had taken an oath, a solemn oath to defend the United States and the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that was patriotism to him. And then somewhere along the line in his own generation, like he remeasured and recut what patriotism meant.
Mm-hmm.
And now it felt more patriotic. I think that there was tension there.
Yeah.
To send like bullets towards the boys in blue that he had been commanding before, who were wearing the same uniform he had once worn. I mean, think about how personal that was to be a commanding officer, and now you're going to order the killing of your own former army. And everybody who fought for the Confederacy, for the most part, like all the generals on both sides, all went to school together at West Point.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, I forget which one. Was it Longstreet, the Confederate general, who had been a good friend of Ulysses S. Grant? Like, they were together, and they were friends after the war. Like, it's just crazy to think all these people who had – but the oaths and the idea, like, we sort of wax eloquently with rhetoric about patriotism today, always have in American history, and I think it has a place. But, like, people redefine it.
Oh, yeah, that floating definition of it.
Yeah.
What makes a patriot?
So a patriot is someone, the people who are attacking the Capitol on January 6th call themselves patriots.
Right.
And the people who are defending the Capitol are also called patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the dissonance of American freedom a little bit. Like, there is a revolutionary spirit that's always been difficult to corral that was necessary to secure our independence, but it's always been, again, sort of like this wild horse that's difficult to hold together in maintaining a peaceful government of that independence together. So, yeah.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
I wonder what it would take for me to turn against you.
A civil war, I would hope. You know what? That's a great question. I think we should all ask. I know you said it maybe in jest, but
yeah.
I think there have been people I thought in my life, there's no way we'd ever be at odds.
Mm-hmm.
And we became at odds. And you just go, you can't imagine. I think that's why, you know, there's a scripture that says, endeavor to maintain the spirit of unity in the bond of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think endeavor is a key word there. Like, you need to make a lot of effort.
Right.
Because these things may not hold together like you think they will. If you want the bond of peace to hold, you got to hold it together. It's not just holding together on its own. You're going to have to keep putting pressure on it.
Yeah, I always think that about when I talk to people who are like newlyweds, I was like, you won't like accidentally stay together.
Yeah.
You got to stay together.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow, that's good.
And like even when you talk about people who are trying to have business success, like there are things you need to do to accomplish success in business. They won't, none of them will accidentally happen.
Yeah.
They all take a lot of effort. And because sometimes I think we see some people who are successful or they're happy or they have strong relationships and you just think like, oh, these lucky people. And I don't know if I believe that. I think there's a lot. I mean, I've been blessed with a lot of things, but man, most of what I've gotten, it's like I can see steps along the way I've taken to preserve something or, you know, maintain something.
I'm a both and guy on that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Well, I just do. I do. Maybe it says I focus on that more than I ever have, that maintenance side. Like when I just did a marriage conference and I talked about it, because I have a bit that I talk about driving junky cars my whole childhood. Mm-hmm. And when I see somebody giving like a brand new car to their 16-year-old kid, I'm like, what kind of monster are you making?
Right.
You know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I was like, I got my first car out of the classifieds. It was a 1973 Buick Electra. It was mint green. And this was the 90s. It was not the 70s. It was not cool. And so, but I talk about it at this marriage conference, and I kind of brought up this point of the check engine light, and all the lights came on my dash. And I was like, I did not grow up. I said, you're at a marriage conference. Some of you guys have good marriages, and you're trying to like, it's a spirit of like maintenance. I said, I did not grow up in a maintenance type family. We did not take the car to the shop until the check engine light came on.
Right.
And so it's almost And that's that. Even if we didn't have the money, we're just like, well, put some black tape over that.
Yeah.
But it's like that thing of we wait until the house is on fire.
Yeah.
Before we do anything. And a lot of times in our relationships or in our marriages or with our vehicles. And sometimes you just live that lifestyle. So I think I'm more of a maintenance guy than I ever have been. I see preventative maintenance as a big deal.
Yeah.
I go get a physical every year now. Whereas I think the first, you know, in your 20s, you're just like, I'm invincible.
Right.
You know, I'll go when I have gut pain or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to, whatever. Why would I, what am I going to take one of my days off and go to the doctor? Are you crazy? Now I'm just like, all right, I got Tuesday off. Let me get the dentist out of the way. Let me I'm going to go get all my blood work done for the year. It's like, that's just something I do. And I'm glad when I did it. That feels good. That's a good day to me.
Yeah.
But that's just me in my 40s. I'm just that guy now, I guess.
Well, I mean,
especially when you get good stuff back and you're like, okay, we're okay.
Yeah.
I bought myself another year of eating at Chili's.
Yeah, there is like
Let's go celebrate.
There is this, I think for those of us who've, like, again, my dad died of congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandfather had major heart surgery. Like, you know, I look ahead.
Yeah.
Probably at an earlier age, I was looking ahead, you know, in some ways. And I'm also, you know, made as a forecaster a little bit, you know, trying to avoid the negative. I want to avoid pain that's avoidable.
Mm-hmm.
It's avoidable pain that hits you that drives me the most crazy. If it's unavoidable, it's just life.
Yeah.
If it was something I could have done, then I just, it's right. Like a whole other level of.
If you see the train coming and everybody else is just like playing on the tracks and you're like, no.
Yeah. Well, I've used that exact analogy a few times because there have been a few things in leadership and relationship even that I have seen come, and I've told people. It's like I see this coming from a mile away, and I'm trying to get us all off the tracks, and it still hit us, and I don't know how.
Would you say you see the train coming? It's coming around the bend. And
oh, Johnny.
And then you shot a man in Reno.
I really think, you know, by the way, when I first got in your car, it absolutely had black tape over the black tape over the check engine light.
It may have.
Oh,
yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, when we laughed about it. Yeah. But that was the Velari.
The other part of it is you get a car stereo louder than your car problems. Crank that thing up. You're like, what engine noise?
Exactly.
All I hear is Aerosmith. But yeah, I had the Velari. That was something, that car.
Yeah.
It was something. It's one of those ones where you had to warm it up.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't just jump in and go
because
it would die.
Yeah.
You'd put it in gear and hit the gas. It would just die. So every day we would start it up. My wife and I would take her to work. We shared a car for like a couple of years of our marriage. So I'd put it in reverse and we'd back up. And then it would die on the way to like us backing. It was, and I would just let it coast to a stop in reverse.
What
with
the
a dead engine.
Always said
and I would just look over at her and I'd go, man, this thing's running quiet.
Every time.
Every time. And it would always make me laugh, and it would never make my wife laugh. She would just be like, just get me to work and start it up again.
I have a few of those things.
Yeah.
Laura look at me and she'll go, really? Like this, you think this is good timing or whatever? And
it's it's weird. Those things in your marriage, I think a lot of marriages have it, but there's just things you always say to each other that they're like a throwaway thing. It's not like it's some hilarious thing, but like one thing that I do is if laundry starts getting like, if we have just like even a half a basket of laundry or a full load of laundry, back in the day, we would just let laundry go for a while. And I'd be like, and one time, this is like early on in our marriage, I said something like, we just need to go to the laundromat and like knock this all out. This is going to take all day. Let's just go. We'll get four machines going, blah, blah, blah. And like, we're not doing that. We're not going and sitting with our clothes. We have a, and I go, okay. So literally that was, I mean, we've been here 27 years to this day. If there's like a basket of towels or whatever, I just go, sweetie, let's just take today. Let's just go to the laundromat. And she'll stop me every time. She'll be like, will you stop it? It's not funny. It's not funny. We're not, because I'm not serious, but it's just like that thing of like, sweetie, this laundry's getting backed up. We just need to go. We just need to go to a laundromat or something. I don't know. I mean, I know we've got one machine, but we could get four or five things on this. We go, man.
You still do it?
Huh? Oh, I still say it.
Yeah, yeah.
I still say it all the time. And sometimes it's like a couple of socks in the basket, but I'll just still say like,
yeah,
this laundry. I'm exhausted to be married to, I'm sure.
Well, mine, you probably know where it came from because we share this one.
Yeah.
I don't remember the original joke with the, it was one of those things where there was no setup. There was only a punchline. And so having no setup is almost funnier.
Mm-hmm.
So it broke in, maybe it was SNL or something. It breaks in and the guy's like, you never heard the first half, but the end of the joke was, the doctor says, wrecked him.
All right.
Dang near killed him.
Yeah.
And so some, like that joke has, I don't even know, you know where it came
from?
Right,
that's an old like street joke from like 50s and 60s.
And it came, so for whatever reason now, anything that ends with
yeah,
I say, like for example,
I
did it at the staff meeting this week.
Yeah.
Someone said, yeah, we could do that Christmas song by Phil Wickham. I go, Wickham?
Wickham.
Dang near killed him. Like, and people have no idea what I'm talking about, but I do it every...
It's funny to you, and that's enough.
Every single time. My wife, though, she'll look at, if you say Wickham, darn near killed him, or whatever. And then now what she'll do,
I will leave you.
What she does now, though, is she says it occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, she knows the joy.
Right.
Like, the joy
she's doing it for you now.
Well, but she knows... It's not funny because it's funny, and it's not funny because I think it's funny. It's funny because I know she doesn't think it's funny, and she's still saying.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many layers.
That's beautiful.
To it. It's 22 years of marriage. You're like, this is amazing. Like,
that's beautiful.
This is everything that I ever wanted. yeah, I mean, there's a hundred. Like any kid, like I think of all the kids with their last name. You know, just like Wickham. Any kid on the volleyball team that has a last name like that, I'll say it. You know what I'm saying? And no one knows. And I realize the staff are so young, most of them, they have no idea.
They don't know the original
context. I don't even know the original. It's now just morphed. I don't know. And to tell them and explain it, you know, it's kind of like Pastor Roy always says, anytime we're talking about paving a parking lot or something, if it ever comes up, man, today they put down new asphalt. He always says.
Whose fault?
Yeah, every time. If you say asphalt, Roy says whose fault.
And if he doesn't understand what you just said, he'll go, shot who? You know what I'm saying? If he doesn't understand you, he'd be like, so you'll mumble something. He goes, shot who? No, Roy. No one was shot. I don't know where that even came from. He's got a bunch of those because he was a carny.
Yeah.
Roy's got like a bunch of those.
Self-proclaimed carny. We're not using a derogatory term. That's what he calls
himself. No, he was a carny.
Yeah.
He worked at a carnival. So, traveling carnival. But so, yeah, he has a lot of those like.
Yeah.
He's like the most worldly wise, street smart person that we've probably ever known. Like he's got all of that, like had to live on his wits.
Right, he
for
was
years
home, he was
of his life
at one point, lived behind a dumpster.
So he has all of that stuff where he's got a million street jokes and a million little like witticisms and weird, you know, sayings.
Well, you know, his book title he always wanted to do someday was, "I ran away from the circus to join a home."
Right.
Yeah.
He did in reverse.
Yeah, but it's a. I don't know. I love those little things because in Roy and I even. Anytime if something's said, we kind of glance at each other, we can start laughing without either one of us dropping the punchline.
Yeah.
We're saying the thing, you know, like because you have the unspoken.
Right. I think those are like, they're almost like relationship savers. When you have all that history with somebody, that you have all those inside jokes in a marriage, you get them.
Yeah.
Like I think every marriage has that thing where if you're walking into a party, you kind of have those signals of like, all right, if I do this, you get me out of there. Or if I touch my head, or if I whatever.
Right.
If
someone makes a five head joke.
If someone says,
right, get me out of here.
If someone says wrecked him, darn near killed him, you get me out of there. But yeah, I always, but some of it's just so funny. I just do it. I do it just to make her smile. It's not even that funny. It's just, some of it's dumb. Like it's like, I always, whenever we're on a plane, I'll be like, all right, I'm going to go to the bathroom. 5 minutes later, you come in. Like I'm always trying to, like, there's no way. Like, first of all, two people can't fit in an airplane bathroom, but it's always like Mile High Club. Let's go. No. So anytime we'll be at a doctor's point. I'll be like, all right, I'm going to go to the bathroom. You wait 5 minutes.
That sounds like something I would. Yeah.
She's so like, great. Johnny, stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun to be.
Yeah.
A chided just a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I still got it. Like I'm.
Right. I'm edgy. But meanwhile, she's probably like, if he does that one more time, I'm going to leave him. Yeah.
I love that joke.
I've totally underestimated. Like I've overestimated how cute it really is. She's like, this is all exhausting.
I used your joke in premarital counseling the other night with somebody.
Oh, no.
I was like, guys, you know, and they know you. So I was like, you know, remember Johnny's joke? I was talking about not interrupting each other. I was like, he says, you know, before you get married, it's like, he knows me so well. How do you say
we finish each other's sentences. He finishes my sentences.
Yeah, 2 years later, it's like, he won't let me finish a sentence. You know, yeah.
I was
like,
this guy.
That's a big.
Yeah.
I've learned that certain people, and I don't want to go all Enneagram, but it's so key because even in the way we lead the staff, nines are.
The worst.
One of,
no, there's no,
no
good
there's
or bad.
No but they're kind of known for like they want their voice to be heard or mm-hmm. the lie that they believe is that their voice doesn't matter.
Okay.
And so nines are strong people. This is not strong or weak. There's something really striking about, I can almost always pick out a nine if we're at a table because they're the person everyone talks over.
Oh, right.
Not just because they're soft spoken. There's something else there.
Yeah.
Like I've known some pretty, I guess, loud-spoken nines, but it's still, there's something about it. It's just easy for the other types to...
Like steamroll them.
Yeah, and they're not even trying. They usually don't even know they're doing it. And so, like, I now feel, because I'm paying attention to that,
mm-hmm.
like I have ways of making sure the nine's voice is heard at the table. Like, hey, I think, Johnny was going to say something. You know, like, I'll make sure I'm paying it because it doesn't even bother them a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Now that it's some internal messaging, but they're so used to it. They just kind of keep going and waiting for their next spot to jump in, while like the eights and the sevens and the threes are just like, they're saying whatever they want to say, the ones, and then, you have others who kind of hold back. And that's not, everyone doesn't all do that the same way. Everyone's got their own unique personality, but.
And it's people are different if they're around like close friends too. They feel more.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like if I'm with, I'm more talkative at dinner with friends, but if I was at a dinner party and I didn't know anybody, and I would, sometimes I'll be invited to do an event and they'll say, hey, we've got a spot for you at our table. And I don't want to be that guy that's like, actually, I'm just going to hang out in the green room until I come out. Like, right. If I feel weird about doing that, I'll go, okay. Now, if I sit at that table, I will totally like wait my turn.
Uh huh.
Because I do not feel the need to just hold court. In fact, I'm afraid of holding court. And failing at it and then having to get up and perform. And they go, that wasn't that funny at the table. And then now they're just like, I'm in the hole with them.
Uh-huh.
So I just try to be like, whatever, just low key. But if it's with friends, I find myself, I got to catch up. I got to tell you the latest story. I got to give my opinion on things.
Yeah. I actually heard, it's funny you say that because I heard somebody I know, a nine married to a two. And one of the ways they feel close is she's willing to interrupt him.
Mm-hmm.
Like she doesn't interrupt anybody else.
Right.
But that's intimacy. She'll interrupt him.
That's what we have, John.
I don't think we have it exactly.
We interrupt each other.
Well, the whole thing's kind of built on conversation, Johnny.
Well, I just feel like I know what you're getting at, and let's go ahead and step on it. Let's go.
Johnny, I'm sick of it. I took to episode 231 to finally say enough is enough.
Wow.
Hey, speaking of, got a big announcement.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
We're finally going
to
do it.
Today's the day to make the announcement.
I've had a couple people ask me, like, you keep teasing this announcement.
We've been teasing it too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
if... Eventually it sounds made up.
If we had teased this...
It's like the cult leader that's like, hey...
Hey.
Something's coming.
The spaceship's coming. Yeah.
By the way, guys, the spaceship is not coming.
It's not coming yet. If we teased Johnny's hair on the front as much as we teased this, then you would have like a six head by now. Like, you know what I'm saying?
We teased my hair? Literally teased it?
Teased it.
Okay.
Which is an interesting term for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you call it that?
It's like, hey, we're going to make this stand up with more
Do people
volume.
Still tease hair? Women don't tease hair anymore, do they?
I don't. You're asking me like I know anything about that.
I don't know. You ever see Laura teasing her hair?
I don't know.
It's when they take the comb and they go like back and like forth, like it's a...
I feel like a pick teases a hair, like a hair pick.
People are just shouting and driving cars into bridge embankments right now.
Like a hockey... Anyway, so the announcement is that...
Hockey? What? I don't
know. I was thinking of the toe pick on a hockey...
Okay.
On a hockey skate.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. A toe pick, which is a reference to what movie?
I don't...
You don't remember... No. Ooh, this is a Johnny. This is a great obscure movie reference.
You is this going to be the one that's? Hold on a minute. I know this is like a love story, right?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
The Cutting Edge.
Cutting Edge, which only you saw.
No, Cutting Edge is a. But in she was a figure skater.
She
he
was a
hockey.
Skater,
and
yeah,
he didn't have a toe pick, and so he kept falling when he was learning how to figure skate. And she'd go toe pick every day. Okay. She enjoyed watching him fall because they were opposites attract. And then they fell
grew
in love.
To love
and
they,
so, yeah. Well, he grew to love her. She was the difficult one in that movie for sure. That's the whole thing. Like she's the, she's like the very, very rich. And so she kind of comes to
suffering
understand
to break
the
through.
World a little more.
Where,
and
the working
people,
class guy has to earn her affection.
Yep. It's,
she's an uptown girl living in her uptown world. Anyway, announcement.
Announcement is the Talk About That podcast has signed with a podcast network.
Yeah.
We are now going to be in a podcast network.
We're going legit.
Yep. It's called Life Audio.
Yep.
And it should be by somewhere in early to mid-December. You should start hearing. You'll hear different things. We'll reference Life Audio Podcast Network.
Yeah.
And you also perhaps even begin hearing some ads from other podcasts on that network. And we'll be doing the same on theirs. They actually also have a whole history podcast network that's sort of like a sister network and stuff. We may do some work with them as well. But just beginning, we're working on this actually all year. There were different possibilities, and this was a real, I guess it's a blessing to be able to find a team that we feel excited to work with, and in terms of marketing, in terms of helping this podcast reach more people. So, So, hey, Johnny, congratulations.
Look, we had many suitors, and we decided to go with Life Audio.
Right.
And we feel good about it.
Right.
And we hope they feel good about it. But
well, we're not counting on it.
We're not counting on it. And to those of you out there like, oh, will this make the podcast lame? We don't know.
We don't know.
We're going to find out together.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be great.
Yeah, podcasts should.
They're fans of the show, so.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing. When we went into the meetings with them, that's one of the things that kind of swayed us was they were already listeners to the show and liked the show and liked it the way it is. So.
Yeah.
We like it when people say, hey,
don't change.
Don't you go,
you guys are perfect just as you are, which we know is not true.
No, it's not.
Because we feel like we should be reaching
close to true.
So we may add or take away here and there, but everybody kind of, we actually have had a long process here of vetting with a lot of different possible partners and others. And that was interesting feedback. Like, despite what Johnny says often on the podcast, like, well, I wish we did more of this.
Why is your impression of me?
I wish we did more of this and we could be better, you know? And I always tell you, like, don't tell them all the reasons not to like us, Johnny. Like, let them figure it out on their own.
Is that a six thing? Is that what you're going to say? Is that my six?
No, I don't know what that is. But you can't put a type on
the need to self-destruct and sabotage.
But I mean, we did hear from everyone, and I think that's what we hear from our viewers as well. Like, hey, we know this can improve a lot, but it's generally the chemistry of the conversation between friends that everybody kind of comes for, you know, and they do learn things along the way. But that's been fun, and I think it is a testament. I hope we all find relationships like what we get to have. Like, you don't get a 25-year friendship very often that you have all the inside jokes and
you
all that stuff.
You can't make old friends, John. Mm,
you can, wow.
See?
That's good.
See what I did? That's actually a song. I think it's a couple songs.
Benjamin Franklin said that, or was it?
No. Oh. I think it was Ben Rector.
Rector? Darn. Okay.
And we're back. Ben Rector does have a song called Old Friends, and it's great.
Yeah.
You can't make old friends.
By the
not
way.
Not a sponsor.
Anyway, thank you to Life Audio Podcast Network. We look forward to joining your slate of amazing podcasts and being a part of it.
Your roster, as it were.
Yeah.
We're, it's a deep bench now, we hope.
Yeah.
We're way down the bench.
Yeah, they're like, listen.
We're like the 12th man.
You're probably not going to see the field.
If we're up 40, we might get in.
Right.
Or down 40.
You're like the fourth string quarterback walk-on.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll hold the clipboard for you guys.
That's fine. We're calling plays.
We're going to learn as we go.
I want to be those guys on the sideline, like, using the hand gestures with, you know, calling the plays. That dude stands there. One of those guys, I'm assuming, is there's three of them with three different you know, colored jerseys on and hats, and they put the black cloth behind them so the guys in the field can see it. And the two of them are decoys. Only one of them is calling the plays for that day.
Oh, right.
That's what they're doing.
Interesting.
For. So some guy's job that day is to call dummy plays with the same enthusiasm as the other two guys.
Man.
Or the other one guy. Wait. Yeah, the other two.
So we could be those dummy plays.
We're the dummy plays, guys on the sidelines. Like, it's not, nothing's really happening. We're just making all the same noises and gestures as the guys around us who are really doing this.
Coaching on television with live video and live streaming is so funny because the way it's morphed is, you know, they have spies on all the sidelines. So now these coaches have to hold up their Denny's menu with all the plays on it and cover their mouths with it.
Right.
And like say the plays into their microphone because there's a lip reader on the other team.
But you know, those plays. It's not like they're saying run the ball left. Like they have names.
Saying, monkey
like,
hairbrush.
Right. Charlie Vector. You know, like there's all these. It's like, could you really read it that easily? Especially when you run an offense that runs a play every 17 seconds.
I like the ones in college where they just hold up like the picture. It'll be like an eyeball and then like Paris Hilton. And then, you know, and then those all mean something depending on where they are in the grid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Paris Hilton's eyeball. There's another.
it's a whole thing.
It is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're excited. Life Audio. I don't know what to say. We're thrilled. We're thrilled to have a partner and we're going to grow this thing. Very exciting. We've been doing this a few years, so.
Yeah.
And we love our audience and we're hoping this will help us reach a new audience.
Yeah.
But it can continue to reach the audience that we have.
Please.
Listen, please don't. There's something we could say that would make you stay. Please imagine we've already said that thing.
Yeah. We would say it.
Yeah, if we knew what it was.
Let's be honest. If you listen this long, you know there's very little we're not willing to say.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? So just imagine we've already
said
it.
That's one thing that's true, and I said this to a buddy the other day. Like, if nothing else with this podcast, I'm glad we did it because, like, if I die, there's like 200 and something hours of my personality.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing to hide. Like, if you listen to this, you know who I am and how I think about things probably.
Yeah.
Because we just, the filter is just not there. I mean, we don't, there's things we don't say that we might say at lunch that we might not say on the air. We might not say it in the same way, but we talk about the same exact things usually.
Yeah.
And our opinions just come out, you know. And sometimes our opinions go, oh, I didn't know I felt that way about that until we talked about it. So that's good. But I just think, like, it's been that, in that way, it's been kind of a gift that, you know, it's almost like a time capsule.
Oh, I completely agree.
And so. It's almost, you know, like when they do the big in memoriam, they just play 200 hours of us.
Gosh, it would be amazing.
People are just stuck in their chairs.
Yeah. How many weeks would that be? Let's see.
It's a long time.
How many hours are in a week?
There's no way to find out.
24 times 7 would be 100 and...
Give or take.
54?
Yeah.
So, yeah, people could listen a straight week.
Yeah.
Before one of our funerals, or both.
And if you'd like to do that, listener, you can go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com. We're not dead, by the way. I don't think. Although we're recording this on a Thursday, it comes out on a Monday.
This would be really...
Lock it happen.
Do you know?
Lock it. I'm taking a road trip as soon as I finish recording this.
Jeez, it's very morbid.
Yeah. Anyway, lock it happen. But if so, I'm with the Lord. Talk about that podcast.com. That's all the archived episodes. You can listen to those. Comment, subscribe, share, do all that. The algorithm... loves it when you do that, and we love it when you do it too.
Yeah.
Go to Patreon, kick in some shekels. Go to our link tree. You can find all of our social links, including John's latest book, which is behind him now, called More Than a Number.
Well, it's not necessarily my latest book.
Well, one of your latest.
Yeah, one of my latest here. Yeah, More Than Your Number. I'm going to put a new book behind me maybe every couple weeks.
I had a suggestion that you might put a book that's not your book behind you every now and again. Just mix in.
I can't.
You've written 28 books or whatever.
Are you going to write an ad at the end of every show for another comedian? I mention other books all the time, but do you want me to actually put it behind me and promote it? Wow.
Would it kill you?
Look, Johnny, my career couldn't get any worse.
Maybe no, stop it. You got a great career.
What I need to do is go like find a discount price on some other guy's book that people want to read and then upcharge it. Like,
there you go.
I mean, I think we call that...
Sell it live on the air.
Just retail.
Yeah.
But I don't want to become a retailer because I hate selling things.
Yeah.
So there's the rub, really. I wonder if they're aware that I have no inner monologue right now. This is all just... Yeah, they know. They know. But seriously, though, great book. More Than Your Number by Beth and Jeff McCord. You'll notice my name is not on the cover of that one, Johnny. But it is on the title page.
That's nice.
Yeah. So...
And you are a collaborator.
Yeah, yeah, I helped him out. There's a team, a whole team on this one's great. But guys, truly, I think revolutionary book, like truly. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that because I wrote it. Like when I first heard the concept, I was like, wow. And it is something I use every day.
Yeah.
And I think this book will have a long shelf life in terms of the people that it reaches. And it gives you some super practical tools for managing your internal world, sort of the cloudedness of the internal world. When you're like, why did I do that again? You know, what is wrong with me? And basically the whole gist is you're more than one thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's more, you know, you are one person, but there's more than one thing going on inside of you. So it's very helpful.
Well, now I know all of it. I don't need to buy the book. Thank you.
No, well, you're welcome. Yeah, that was easy, wasn't it? So,
Cliff's Notes.
Yep, there you go. Most people don't realize that it's Cliff's Notes and not Cliff Notes.
Well, it used to be Cliff Notes, and then Cliff's Notes was like a company that made Cliff Notes. And so it became known as Cliff's Notes, but...
But people
they were
just,
Cliff Notes.
People just say, neither one of those, they say Cliff Notes.
Cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though that's Cliff, not right? appropriate. So what they've done is the thing that was made to shorten books,
yeah.
that name has now been shortened and simplified.
Man.
Wow.
We changed.
It did to itself what it was doing to everything else.
We did it, America.
Yeah. Way to go, guys.
Yeah. It's like, why is abbreviation such a long word?
Mm.
That's a George Carlin bit. Thank you, George Carlin.
Appreciate that, George. Not a sponsor. So, hey guys, thanks for the time you spent with us today. We thoroughly enjoyed it, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week on
Talk About That.
A powerful prayer life does not require hiking a mountain to be able to hear from God. God can meet us right in the middle of our busy lives to help, guide, and speak to us through prayer. I'm Christina Patterson, host of the Teach Us to Pray podcast, providing practical teaching and encouragement on how you can make prayer a natural and consistent part of your everyday life. I promise it won't require hiking a mountain, but you just might develop the faith to move one. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.